Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Howdy all, I am Glenn the Geek from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I am Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for March 2nd, 2011, Episode 88, sponsored today by Back on Track. Good morning, Horse World.
That's his horsenality.
Guess what? I found out yesterday when I was reading around that I am above average in so many ways. And I'm going to tell you about why I'm above average in a little bit here. But I was so excited because I am above average. This horse husband, America's horse husband, is above average. Just thought I'd let you know. I'm going to let you know why in a minute. And then we can compare your hubby, the super duper fighter pilot guy. We can compare Chad and see if he's above average, too, or if he's just a below-average fighter pilot guy. We'll do that.
Okay. I'm going to make a wager, but I'll keep it to myself.
Okay.
But I got to bust you on something. Oh, my gosh. I'm about to gag. Right before the music starts and the show starts, you know, we have these microphones that we have to talk into, and they're covered by these big red, like, these big red clown nose looking things that are, they're kind of soft and squishy, and, you know, they do stuff like that. Anyway, right before we go on the air, mind you, I am incredibly allergic to cats. Glenn says, right before we go on the air, oh, my microphone is covered in cat hair. I've started to get a little sick because of that. Just the thought.
I think my cat must have been on the desk this morning rubbing all over my microphone bowl because it's covered in cat hair.
Do you know what that does to me? I can feel your cat's hair in the back of my throat right now. I might have to take the rest of the show off. It's so gross.
Jamie came to visit us. Jamie came to visit us right after when we were thinking about hiring her, and we had her come out for like 4 days, and we forgot to ask her if she was allergic to cats, so the whole time she was about dying, she was staying with us.
Wheezing. I mean, I'm like, I swear, I'm a whole lot of fun typically, but do you have a CVS close by? Because I'm about to die.
Yeah. Well, we don't ever have to worry about Jamie staying with us again, Jennifer. That's not a problem.
No, it won't be. I can see the headline. Hairball epidemic hits Horse Radio Network.
Yeah, I've got one right now from just hearing that your cat rubbed on your microphone. Ugh. And you know what's funny is I can take a shedding blade to my quarter horse who probably has some sort of Cushing's problem. He's 25. His hair is like 6 feet long. And I can take the shedding blade and I can have an entire pile of his hair on the ground when I'm done. And it looks like he laid down and rolled. Yet one cat hair, just one, makes me go. It doesn't make any
you've
sense.
You've got chickens. You've got everything else over there, and you're allergic to a cat?
I'm just telling you, the thought of your cat rubbing on your microphone and then getting your mouth really close to it. Oh, God. Okay.
Well, that's a way to start a quality show like Horses in the Morning. Jennifer, what's up today?
What's up today? what can I say after that conversation? My gosh. On today's show, we've got some great wit, wisdom, and wisecracks. Both wit and wisdom will be provided by Smokey Brandeman, author of several great books on horsemanship. And yes, he is related to Buck Brandeman, currently making lots of headlines. Next up will be a heaping helping of wisdom with a dash of wisecracks from our Wednesday health report from thehorse.com. Christy's been on a roll lately, so look out. And scattered throughout, a bit of all three from our Facebookers and callers. So enjoy.
Well, today's first Daily Whinny. It's kind of a sad one, actually. This goes out to our friends Michelle and Rick from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, over there at Wright Lead Equestrian Center. We've been following the progress of her horse Sprite, her young Cleveland Bay, who had multiple colic surgeries, and we thought she was healing. And, of course, Michelle's been on the show a couple times talking about it, and they're good friends of ours. Well, they had to bring Sprite back into the hospital again last night, and the doctor just finally said, look, there's probably too many lesions from the colic surgeries. So they ended up having to put her down early this morning, I think. So our sympathies to them. And, you know, as we always say, may Sprite find the perfect pasture in the sky. So RIP to Magnolia Sprite and to our best to Michelle and Rick. We're going to have a song for them later in the show. And I think Jamie also has a Daily Whinny today.
I'm telling you, this stuff is catching on. Diane Brooks, thanks to, she wrote on our Facebook page, thanks to you and your sponsors, I now give one of my horses Omega Alpha Equicellite. I also bought several of the Redmond Rocks, and my horses love them. I love the diversity of your shows. So much to learn about what other people do with their horses and what products out there for horses that I must have because they're necessary. I need to retire to try it all out. Girlfriend, I know. I feel you. It's amazing how much. I mean, Diane, we could sit here and I have four horses, and I want to try everything on all of them, but I'm telling you, The Omega Alpha and the Redmond Rocks are part of our day. They are part of our day. So I feel you. That's your Daily Whinny.
All right, good. And I wanted to mention, too, that yesterday we had a meeting over at Alltech. Hadn't been over there since the World Equestrian Games. Of course, we worked with Alltech pretty closely when we did the 2010 radio show all about the WEG Games. And we did a fundraiser over there for the para equestrians. And, you know, we worked with them fairly closely. So it was nice to go back over there and see everybody again. Shout out to our friend Susanna over there. And I also met one of the girls that was part of this.
Ready?
Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I've got a beautiful feeling. Horses are coming my way. You're listening to Horses in the Morning.
That was the promo that we put together on a whim at the World Equestrian Games in the Alltech Pavilion. And Allie Hembry was in there, and she was one of the girls that you heard. And I got to meet her again yesterday. She said, do you guys ever use that? And I said, yep, we use it all the time. So she was so excited that we actually used that little promo we put together just on the spur of the moment at the World Equestrian Games. So just wanted to give her a shout out too. Jamie,
I am
above average. And I want to say, I am above average in so many ways. It's unbelievable how many ways I'm above average. And I'm going to tell you there. And now I also want to find out if Chad, your lovely fighter pilot, super duper hero husband, is above average too. So we're going to, there was a study that came out from Britain the other day. And we're just going to go down through it, and we're going to see how he compares and how I did and why I am so above average. And you, all the ladies out there, you can take a listen and see if your husbands or your boyfriends are above average as well. So here we go. Did you realize that the average guy spends 10,585 hours in a pub? Now, that's in England. You have to keep that in mind, where pubs are more popular over there. And I can honestly say I am considering myself above average here because I do not spend $10,585. I can probably tell you I have spent 5 hours in a pub in the last year.
Hey, hey,
okay.
I got a sinking suspicion that makes you below average.
Below.
No.
Yeah.
No, it's
yeah.
all how you interpret
below.
It. I drink less, which makes me superior than the ones who sit around and drink for 10,585 hours in a pub. It's all how you look at it. See?
Your number is below, you're below. I would love to say that my husband is also below average, but I would be wrong. He would be above average because I'm pretty sure that before he met me, he spent more than 10,585 hours in a bar.
Isn't that a requirement for a fighter pilot?
I think it is. And they still spend, they have a bar in their squadron, okay, at work. And on Friday nights, all the guys walk out of their office and go into the bar. I mean, it's ridiculous. So, yes, my husband is very above average. Glenn, sorry to tell you, you're below average.
No. I'm still sticking with the fact that I think I'm above average on this one.
Oh, next.
I'm sticking with that.
Next.
Next one is 11 years in front of a TV. I can honestly say, I maybe watch 1 hour of TV lately a day. So I think I'm above average there, too. Actually, I'm a below above average. So I'm thinking it's good as well.
Well, now let me put my mine in here. If we count watching YouTube videos on your computer, you're getting a lot closer to average.
No. We're not counting that, see, though, because this is my interpretation of their study. So I'm not counting it. And I'm assuming Chad doesn't have much time to watch TV either.
Hold on, I'm doing the math right now. That's 91 days. Let's see.
You might watch a lot of baseball, though. That adds up.
Yeah, that's the thing about baseball. They're about 3 hours a game. So we don't watch the whole entire game because usually, it's on, but it's kind of halfway over. But I think in his lifetime, I think 11 years is very excessive. So I would say below
very, very long hours per baseball game.
Shut up. It's three fascinating, scientifically amazing. It's the game of inches, so you never know what's going to happen. Baseball's so awesome. Okay.
Three
some less
spit-filled hours per game. Okay, so the average guy learns to cook just 4 meals in his lifetime. And Jennifer will attest that I'm the cook in the family, and I probably have 100 meals that I can cook
in my
lifetime.
Yeah, you're well above average on that one. I'll give you that.
Yes, I win. I see I'm above average. And so how about your lovely fighter pilot husband?
Man, okay, so I'm gonna tell on him a little bit here because, granted, I love it when he cooks dinner. I think it's awesome. And he basically cooks dinner on Valentine's Day and my birthday and special days like that. And the guy makes – okay, he's not listening. The guy makes the same meal every single time. Every time. It's awesome. I mean, it's fantastic. But it is the same meal. He's like, I had to go buy the ingredients for Valentine's Day. And I knew exactly what to get because I knew what he was going to make. It's the same meal. So I would say that my husband is about average because he makes breakfast. If it wasn't room for me, he'd have breakfast for breakfast and dinner.
He's pretty good at eggs, huh?
He's really good at eggs. And he would have that particular pasta that he makes for me. So he can make waffles, pancakes, eggs, and this pasta. So 4 meals. He's average.
4 meals.
He's very average.
There you go.
Well, I'm winning on that one. I think I'm winning on the
way
cooking
up,
one.
Way above average.
You know, but then he's got a disadvantage. You're a freaking vegetarian. You don't eat anything. So it's kind of hard to make different stuff, using the tofu bricks. Sound very, very appetizing, tofu bricks.
The brick of tofu.
Put it in the microwave, heat it up, serve it.
I can't wait till you guys come to visit because you're having tofu curry. You're going to have tofu burgers.
We'll
oh,
be
come
eating
on
out a lot. Chad and I will be visiting. We'll be visiting one of those pubs, I think. The typical British man sleeps with 9 partners over a lifetime. I have no comment on this one. I'm moving on. Waste one
Why
month.
Why did you even read that one, dude?
I don't know. I was going to skip that one, and then I started reading and went, oh, crap.
Let's not go there.
I'm doing my own interpretation of this one. It's making me above average. Wastes 1 month looking for socks. I don't have that problem. I have a lot of socks, and they're all the same, so they all match. But I will have to concede that I probably waste more than 1 month looking for my damn keys in my wallet. God, I can never find them. We had a big problem. When we lived, we had a big farm for about 10 years, and the house was 5,000 square feet. It had 22 rooms. It had like 24 closets, five bathrooms. It was a huge house. I could never find my keys or my wallet in that house. It just drove me insane. We have a much smaller house now, so it's a little bit easier, but I still have trouble finding my keys in my wallet.
Yeah, guys, this is where I found Glenn's phone the other day. Like, because we don't have landline phones, we have cell phones. So they're attached to us most of the time. Glenn leaves his phone in the trash can in the bathroom.
What? No way.
Yeah.
I think it was on the trash can in the bathroom and it fell in.
What would make any human being think that that's a good place to put your telephone?
Amazing. Amazing.
All right. So I exceed this one. The average man is 5'10" tall. I'm 6'1". Yay! I definitely won that one. And I know your husband's pretty tall, too.
He's 5'10".
Is he really?
He just looks tall because Jamie's so short.
Oh,
exactly. Exactly. Being 5'2¾" has its advantages. You can date short guys, tall guys, and average guys. 5'10 being average. And he weighs about 170, 175, which is exactly what you say the average weight is. I would think that he's on the thinner side, though. That seems like a pretty... The average weight being 175 pounds, that doesn't seem right to me. That seems light.
Well,
I
was actually going to skip that one, too, because we're going on now.
Because you're above average, my friend.
The average man earns 28,270 pounds a year, which is about $4 million in the United States. It's probably about 40,000 in the United States. So I'm saying a little above average there. Each year he spends, now this one I'm below average and I'm proud to say it. Each year an average man spends 570 pounds, which is about $700-$800 on designer clothes. I can honestly say that between Jennifer and I, we don't shop much. We probably don't spend that much in a year on clothes, let alone designer clothes. We're really bad at
Now, Glenn, if you count name brand riding clothes, you still don't come close. You probably
Chad a clothes hound?
No, definitely not. I mean, it's funny because this transformation has taken place where pretty much all my clothes and Chad's clothes, his mother sends us because she loves to shop, and she will go through. She's awesome. I get a package in the mail about every 3 months with clothes in it. It's great. She loves to shop, and she goes like to Dillard's, like the off rack, you know, and buys these clothes. And I can see the price tag; it's like $4 for a shirt. She gets it on major sale. She loves the hunt, and she loves buying for all her kids and grandkids. And then she just mails it out to us. It's fantastic. So we don't spend much on clothes at all. But you got to know your audience too, because I don't think many horse people spend $800 a year on designer clothes. Now, designer shoes for my horse, yes, yes, yes. I mean, he gets more than $800 on shoes a year by far. So it just you have to know your audience, I guess.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think that, you know, if we exclude horse clothing or, you know, your horse wear, rather, what you wear around the barn and your breeches and all that stuff, we exclude that, then we're probably not close to that on average as horse people. How about almost $1,300 a year on beer? I don't like beer, so I'm above average because I don't spend that much on beer.
No, that makes you below average.
Yeah,
now,
you guys
are looking at this all wrong. I do know that you like beer, and that's probably... Hey, you guys, you probably spend that much on beer, don't you?
It's
you
not
know what?
About me, Glenn. Glenn, it's not about me. It's about my husband. And I would say that my husband is extremely above average.
And you know why? Because you have to drink that much beer to get through a freaking 3-hour baseball game where all I do is spit.
See, Glenn, on the other hand, you're below average on beer, but you're way, way above average on chocolate and bananas.
I do like bananas and anyway. I'm pregnant.
Girl. You're a pregnant woman. Glenn lives his life like a pregnant woman.
I will say that this one I am way above average on, and that's about $2,500 a year on gadgets. I would say that I am a gadget freak. I love gadgets. I love electronics. But there is somebody that has me beat on this, and it's a co-host of one of our shows, and that's Chris. Chris from over there on the eventing and dressage and jumping shows, she buys every frickin' new gadget that comes out. iPads and iPhones, and I'm very jealous, actually. And she buys them all the day they come out. She is a gadget hound, but I do like my gadgets, too. And you know what? I got to imagine Chad's a little bit in. See, Chad doesn't have to buy his gadgets. He gets to play with a $100 million gadget every day, an F-16. He gets to play with that every day for free.
And you would think that would be enough, Glenn, but it's not. We've got this projector TV, and then he had to buy these speakers so he could set up a surround sound system and wire that. Now, oh, by the way, the laptop that I got for Christmas, is currently sitting in the living room plugged up to Netflix, which is attached to his iPod. There's no laptop for me. It's his laptop that he used because he wanted to connect it to his projector system so he could then use Surf Online and then have it come out on the projector screen. I'm like, thanks for my laptop, honey. Here, I got you a horse. It's about the same.
Yeah, and who rides the horse more?
Exactly. Honey, I got you a pony. Oh, yeah. So,
well, here's
a couple
more
deal.
I want to get through before we get our first guest on. It seems, and this one, Jennifer and I are way over on this one. I don't even believe this one. About $550 a year eating out. We spend
way more.
Spend that eating at, you spend $50 eating an Applebee's for two people. So I don't know where that one comes from. Maybe we eat out a lot more than most people, but I find that hard to believe. Anyway, this is an interesting one. It seems that modern men are feeling guilty about their lazy lifestyles because they will say, I'm sorry, 1.9 million times during their lifetime.
A smart man would.
Well, I said that to Jennifer yesterday, and she said, well, then, you're way off. What did you say, Jennifer?
Well, you're way, way above average.
Yeah.
Way,
apparently,
way
I say I'm
average.
Sorry a
you do
lot.
That, you do that in 1 week.
She's well-trained, Jennifer. Well-trained.
Right.
Women are still the main purchasers in most households and tend to do approximately 80% of the household shopping, which I kind of believe that one. This one was interesting, and I'm going to brag on the men here. As to physical traits, the research found men are, on average, 30% stronger than women, have 4% more brain cells, weighing approximately 100 grams more, and have a better distance vision and depth perception. And then they went on to talk about the things that women are better at. We'll skip those.
Oh, my gosh. Listen, who's better at seeing color? Okay, women, hello. Men, like, have color problems. I can see colors. We can see the beautiful chestnuts and sorrels and grays and buckskins where you guys see black and white sometimes. So there you go. Average woman, you skipped over this, 5'4". So I'm only a little below average. Thank you very much.
Did that surprise you, by the way?
That seems short, but this is a Britain survey, so maybe they're shorter over there. I would say that the average woman around here is 5'5", 5'6". What do you think, Jennifer?
That's what I was thinking.
I think I'm going to go with that 5'5", yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking, too.
Yeah.
And that's all for that study. Let's go on.
Women also have better night vision and visual memory and are better suited to endurance tasks. And also, women have 4 times as many cells connecting the right and left sides of the brain, making her better at problem solving and multitasking. Thank you very much. Booyah, Glenn.
Well, you know how to ruin every study that we ever bring out here, don't you?
I like that. Go ahead.
So I would say,
overall,
Chad and I are both way above average. We're just gonna. The bottom line of this whole study is that we're way above average because men also have the ability to look at things the way they like to look at things or the way they want to look at things. And I'm looking at this study and saying we're above average. Case in point solved. It's over.
Congratulations, you're above average in height.
Yeah, I got to talk about your friend Inyata. They did a auction here. The YMCA did an auction to raise money for the Y, and you're going to be very happy to know that they were selling a visit. They were actually selling a visit for 4 to 6 people to visit Horse of the Year Inyata at the farm out here at Lane's End and to take pictures and things like that. Take a guess at what it sold for. You'd think, what, $200-$300 to go just to go visit Inyata?
Oh, no, it went for way more than that. You are underestimating. I have a dog named Inyata. That's how much she is, how awesome she is that she, I mean, everybody knows who she is. Everybody wants a piece. I would say it went for a ton more than that.
You're absolutely right. $10,500.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't know it was that high.
Yeah, $10,500 just to go to Lane's End and visit Inyata. And then the minimum wood was $3,000, and it just went up from there. And they also auctioned Zenyatta's halter, and it was sold for $2,100.
Wow.
Overall, the YMCA auction raised $26,000, and about $13,000 was that from those two Zenyatta items. How incredible is that?
That's amazing. That's amazing. Very cool. Good for them. I mean, to be a benefactor of a Zenyatta auction, you're going to be score.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Well, that's it.
Well,
that's all the time we have for news today. Let's do our sponsor and get our first guest on the line here.
I was going to tell you that Back on Track is our sponsor for today's show, and their products are endorsed by many of the top dressage, eventing, and show jumping riders worldwide. But they're not just for the pros. Any level of rider can benefit from the unique line of therapeutic products for horses, humans, and dogs, too. They have stuff for your dog. Zenyatta, here we come. Back on Track has some new products available, exercise boots, bell boots, and Western saddle pads. Back on Track's product's genuine aim is to contribute to your horse's well-being and good health in the easiest, most comfortable, and pleasant way. You can learn more about Back on Track products at backontrackproducts.com.
And our highlight product of the week is the Contender 2 Saddle Pad. It delivers therapeutic thermal heat with Back on Track state-of-the-art fabric, Weltex, which contains ceramic powder. This specially designed fabric reflects your horse's natural body warmth and creates a soothing and infrared thermal heat. Tired or sore back muscles experience relief from this soft heat therapy. Combine this with Thinline's ultra-thin-line material, which provides maximum shock absorption and comfort for both you and your horse, making this one terrific saddle pad. And that's the Contender 2 Saddle Pad. You can find it at backontrackproducts.com. Well, Janie, I am very excited to introduce our first guest today. He has written books, and I just like his style. We're all about comedy and fun here at Horses in the Morning. And this gentleman, once you hear the title of his books, you can understand that he's the same way. He's kind of related to that brother of his, but we're not talking about him today. We're here to talk about Smokey Brannaman, and Smokey lives in Greenleaf, Wisconsin, and he raises and trains quarter horses of his own, and he also does something that we're very excited about and love to talk about, and that's he does Civil War reenacting and Wild West shows and all kinds of stuff. Smokey, welcome to Horses in the Morning. It's good to talk to you this morning.
Good morning, Glenn. Hello there, Jamie. How are you guys today?
Fantastic.
We're great. Did you notice how I threw your brother Buck under the bus there?
Yeah. Well, he's a big guy. He can handle it.
Well, I am so excited to have you on. First of all, my wife and I, we spent 12 years doing Renaissance reenactments, and we just love history and, you know, going to reenactments. Have you been doing that for long?
I've been doing Civil War reenacting now probably going on 20 years. I started when I was in the service, and I was stationed back in Virginia, and I always liked history, and particularly Indian Wars. But when I got back to Virginia there, I was right in the heart of the Civil War, you know, historical area, and got involved with the Civil War reenacting, and I'm into horses, so cavalry was the way to go.
Yeah, and, you know, you look the part. But you have
Thank
to play.
You. I appreciate that.
You have to play a sergeant or a captain or something like that.
I'm actually a corporal, but that's perfect for me because I got a little bit of responsibility, but I don't have to do the political stuff.
And are you Union or Confederate?
We actually do both. Our unit
is
the 1st Alabama. 1st Alabama Cavalry is our unit, and during the actual Civil War, there was a 1st Alabama U.S. Volunteer Cavalry and a 1st Alabama Confederate Cavalry, and they were both recruited out of Montgomery, Alabama, and fought against each other throughout the whole war.
Wow, you have to buy double the amount of stuff.
Yeah, it gets a little spendy with two saddles and two uniforms and three or four different kinds of guns and...
We were in Williamsburg for the 250th anniversary. We spent a week there, and they had one of the largest reenactments I've seen during that special week of celebrating their 250th. And they had the camp set up like you guys do when you go out to your reenactments where they're selling all the stuff. Wow, that can get expensive just collecting all the bits and pieces to make your uniform.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, depending on how historically accurate you want to get with it, you can get a completely hand-sewn uniform, and a jacket alone will cost you $500. So you can do it cheaper than that, but it also looks cheaper, too. So we tried to do the best job we can to portray it as accurately as possible. And I would guess that I probably got about $10,000 wrapped up in my stuff.
Wow. And that doesn't include the horses.
No, or the truck or the trailer to get them there.
Now tell us about, you know, I didn't mean to really go off on the Civil War thing, but that's, Jennifer and I just love this stuff. So tell me what horses work best, because there's shooting, there's cannons going off. Are you riding quarter horses? Are you riding walking horses? What did they use back then, and what do you use today?
Well, back then, there was a mixture of different horses. A lot of them came from Canada. Down in the South, they were an agrarian society, so there was a lot of walker-type horses of that nature. The breeds, of course, were different back then. They didn't necessarily classify the breeds, but there was a mixture of different kinds of horses, and then there is today, too, in the reenacting world. And what it really boils down to with our reenacting horses is the same as it works for every other horse out there that people want to buy. It's you want to get a horse that's suited personality-wise and intelligence-wise to do the job that you want to do safely. So I myself have rode quarter horses, and my primary horse right now is a Russian Akhaltekhi, which was bred in Turkmenistan to be an army horse.
We have done the Akhaltekhis have come up here several times. We've done a show on them. We had a special episode on them, and they've just come up in conversations. I had never heard of them before we started doing Horses in the Morning, and it's amazing how many people now we're running into with them.
Yeah, it's a pretty rare breed in the United States, and they've been trying to bring more and more of them over to put them in dressage and hunter-jumper stuff, which I worked for a gentleman here in Wisconsin that raised and bred Akhaltekhis, and that's how I got a hold of this one. So I got quite a lot of experience with them.
Well, let's get back to you a little bit. Tell us a little bit.
Sure.
Did you grow up in a horsey family, or was this something that came later?
We were raised, well, we were born in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, but we didn't spend a whole lot of time here. Our folks moved out to the West shortly thereafter that, and we were raised on various horse and cattle ranches throughout the West, and ultimately wound up at Forrest and Betsy's place in Montana, our foster folks' place, which is a 5,000-acre ranch with couple hundred head of horses and cows and doing the typical cowboy thing.
Right. Well, and if, so you grew up riding everywhere and everything and learning how to stick to the saddle.
Did the rodeo thing with the professional trip roping, and in high school I rode saddle broncs and bulls and barebacks and bucked it too. Yeah, it was, and I'm kind of feeling that these days.
I just love it because a real cowboy says, yeah, back in high school I rode, you know, it's like, that is the worst time to do it. I mean, you're setting yourself up for future damage, but you're crazy enough to do it back then, you know?
Yeah, you're kind of bulletproof back then, but I'm not quite so bulletproof anymore. I try to keep from getting bucked off these days.
You have a book that has a title that I absolutely love. One of the things that comes up here on the show a lot is the fact that very seldom is ever the horse's problem, and mostly it's the owner of the rider's problem. And you have a book called Whisper This to Yourself, Not Your Horse. I'm assuming that's where you went with this book.
Well, yeah, that's my first book. I self-published that one about 6 years ago or so. And when I wrote that book, I was laid up with a bad shoulder and just had some surgery on it because I got into a little bit of an argument with a big Friesian stud horse that wanted to go one direction when I wanted him to go another, and he tore my rotator cuff and broke a chunk off the socket of the bone on the inside, and so I had to go get some surgery and get it fixed. And I was sitting around feeling pretty worthless, and I decided to write this book. And really what it entails is, I think over the years, particularly with the advent of the natural horsemanship phenomenon, people have got the impression that they can go out and buy any horse and watch a few videos and read a couple of books, and they can train this horse and make it perfect. And this book really concentrates on trying to get people to understand that there is a certain number of people that can do that type of work. And if you don't have the experience to take a horse like that and do it safely, you got no business doing it. So you should be going out and looking for a good, safe horse that meets your needs and your experience of riding and enjoy them, and then learn from that horse, and then perhaps go out and get another horse that might be a little bit more challenging.
Well, I just find it ironic that, you know, not to point out the obvious, but your brother is considered the horse whisperer. So was this something that was kind of a little bit of a competitive nature, writing a book, say, Whisper This to Yourself, Not to Your Horse? Or, you know, is there any basis in that area?
No. No, I honestly didn't write it as a dig to Buck or to the other clinicians out there. I think what they have to offer is very good stuff for the people that are up to speed and knowledgeable enough about their horses and training to get something out of their clinics. But a lot of times what I see is people that really got no business with the horse they have go out and spend tons of money going to clinics and really not getting the benefit out of that clinic because they're not at the level of education to be able to use it. So it's just kind of going at it from a little different angle. And my customers, most of them don't even know who Buck is because they're first-time horse owners and they get themselves in trouble by going out and getting a free horse that somebody else has already thrown away, and they base their entire opinion on horses on movies and TV shows and stuff like that when they really should be basing their horse experience on learning from that horse and getting something safely and not getting busted up.
Yeah,
so that's kind of the road that I took.
Well, and I think that's a great road, and that's the kind of road that people need. They need that help buying horses and finding safe horses. You know, unfortunately, we've all seen the story where, oh, but he's so pretty. Yeah, he's only 3 years old. We can grow up together. And it's
you can't ride pretty.
No.
Buck, we have a little bit that we play here. Listen to this.
Green on green makes black and blue. Wouldn't ride that horse if I were you. It's like walking on a hot, tight wire. Dynamite too close to fire.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I wish I'd had that. I'd put it in my second book. I got my second book, Equinology 101, is kind of a follow-up to Whisper This, and it's all about the experiences that people have had the bad experiences and going through, and I kind of set it up as a study guide for your different degrees. And one of the certificates you can get is the certificate from Buck Off U, which is Buck Off University. And Black and Blue U and the School of Hard Knocks. And it's a pretty fun book. It's a little bit more humorous than my first one, and I think people enjoy it. It's only been out a couple months now, so
and
not a lot of people know about that one yet. It's called Equinology 101.
I love the title.
And it takes you through your different degree programs all the way up to your Master's of Equinology. And you got to start out on the bottom with your PhD, which is your pre-horse degree. And you generally get that one by doing research on briar horses and watching a lot of My Friend Flicka movies perhaps getting some riding experience at the circular trail course at the circus and the electric Walmart course out in front of the Walmart store. And if you're really lucky, you might be able to get on a real pony out at Grandpa's place. And then, once you get past that, then you go on to your FHD, which is your first horse degree. And generally people will make a lot of mistakes on that with going out and buying the wrong horse. And so I try to answer questions for folks and put them back on the right track. Throughout this book, it's all questions and stories of people that have bought the wrong horse or gotten bucked off or need some help trying to figure out what they did wrong. And once you get them through that degree, then you move on to your BOH, which is your Bachelor's of Horsemanship. And by then, hopefully you've learned what a good horse is and how to go find one and do the right things with that horse and learn more to where you can move on up to the Master's of Equinology. And you get it all in one easy lifetime lesson, all in one book.
So, Buck, you've obviously, worked with lots and lots of people who have made that initial wrong horse decision. Some people keep making the same wrong horse decision over and over. They get the wrong one, then they get another one, and that's also the wrong one, and they get another one, and that's also the wrong one. What do you think?
Because nobody's taught them what a good horse looks like.
What a good horse looks like. Do you have a top two reasons people buy the wrong horse? Top two. Now, we're going to assume this is a person who is of sound mind and body, and who has a professional helping them, and they still buy the wrong horse. What are the top two reasons?
The number one out of all the way across the board is they want a pretty horse. They don't care what the background is on the horse. They don't care what the training is. They don't care what the age is. They want pretty. That's the number one mistake people make. You can't ride pretty. You can ride a good horse with a good brain, but you can't, and it can be pretty too, but it better have a good brain to start with and a good personality and be trained to the level that you need it to be. The other second reason, I think, is people watch way too many movies and too many different things on TV and convince themselves that they can ride anything with hair because they've perhaps gotten on a couple horses that might have jumped around a little bit and they got lucky enough to stay on. And so they figure they can go out and buy a two-year-old and watch a couple movies and things will be great.
Okay, so we're gonna get more specific on this, and I'm having a great time picking your horse wisdom brain. So we're going to go look at horses, and little Sarah has brought along her best buddy and pal who has tons and tons of horse show experience. And they're looking at horse A and horse B for Sarah, the low-level hunter, jumper, rider. What would be two personality traits, one that you would look for and one that you would run screaming from for little Sarah, the low-level hunter, jumper, rider?
How old is she?
This little Sarah, our hunter, jumper, rider, is 14, and she takes a riding lesson every single week with a reasonably competent instructor who's not along with her. Now, Sarah is going to be attracted to personality type A, but she should really get personality type B. Personality type A, this is one thing. If you see this personality trait in the horse for little Sarah, run.
Well, what I would say is, for a young person like that that's in the show, and the mistakes she's going to be making, her and probably her parents, if they're very competitive, is they're going to look for a proven winner. They're going to look for a younger horse, possibly, that's in the prime, that's won it and been there and done that, but might not necessarily be the right personality for that particular rider because she doesn't have the experience to ride that horse to the winner's circle. So what's going to end up happening is she's going to get on, she's going to be a little bit tense, the horse is going to get tense, she's going to give it the wrong cue, the horse is going to do something bad, she's going to start pulling and jerking a little bit, and the horse might have a real soft mouth because he's trained pretty well for that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's just going to escalate, and things are going to go wrong, and they're not going to win. And she needs, what she's going to need to start with is maybe one step above that nice, gentle schooling horse that she's been on. Get a horse that's not necessarily in the prime of the winner's circle, but one that's still got some years to go, that has been there and done that, you know, that could take her to, you know, maybe a second or a third place in a show and build on that confidence and then go out and look for that high power.
I see. Not the rock star necessarily, but the steady performer who's always in the ribbons.
Exactly. Exactly. Uh-huh. You know, I used to, when I was in the service, I did some coaching for the 4-H clubs in the various areas where I was, and it never failed. You'd get five or six little league parents in there with their kids, and they got a lot of money, and they go out and buy a $25,000 horse for this 4-H kid to go and win every ribbon there is in the world, you know. And sometimes it would work only because the horse is so good that all the kids got to do is sit up there and hold on, and the horse will do it all for them. But more often than not, it didn't work because they go out there and try and do something with this horse that they weren't capable of doing, and it would just turn into a mess.
And kind of untrain the horse, yeah.
Exactly. Well, I, for one, when I judge those horses or those shows, I would place them at the bottom of the ring because, in my opinion, those kids weren't doing, and their folks weren't holding the spirit of 4-H. You know, 4-H is supposed to be a learning process where these kids take a horse that's not finished and high power and ready to win and take them out there and learn about that horse and ride it and learn the showing and the sportsmanship and that type of stuff. And I didn't do a whole lot of judging of those shows because they didn't agree with my opinion, but that's just the way I looked at it.
Well, how many times, though, have you seen somebody that gets a horse and then they 6 months later have to sell the horse and get another horse, and 6 months later they hate that horse and sell it, and 6 months later they have to sell the next horse, and don't you just want to shake into them, it's not the horse, it's you.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it goes full circle to your book, whisper this to yourself, not to your horse, because it's you.
Yeah, it goes that way quite often, and that's why I chose this field of horsemanship and training, to try and get the word out there and try and educate more people about the right way to go about getting into the horse world and doing it safely and correctly and learning from it, you know, and then go try and be a horse whisperer. Because let me tell you, I train colts too, and I start colts, and I'm actually sitting here today with a banged up leg because I took a young horse out yesterday because it was fairly warm up here and it got to be thawing and got a little slick, and she got scared and jumped and lost her footing and fell down on top of me. So I got kind of a bunged up leg today. And that's what people are going to run into if they try to go out and buy a horse that ain't right for them. You know, I mean, accidents can happen with any horse, but you just magnify that by getting a horse that doesn't meet your needs and isn't solid and steady for you. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Well, we're running out of time here, Smokey, but I wanted to say that I am very pleased now. I don't know if you were listening to the beginning of the show where we were talking about how above average that I am with all of those things that we talked about. Now, Jamie seems to disagree with that a little bit, but I also am thrilled to know that in your book, Equinology 101, I have a PhD. That's the first one I've ever had. Yeah.
Good for you.
I'm excited.
Good for you.
That,
work on that,
makes...
that FHD.
Thank you so much, Smokey. You can find more information about Smokey at SmokeyBrannaman.com. And I noticed that all of your books are listed on there. They can find them all, and also information about your clinics and the seminars and things like that that you have coming up are also listed on there. Is there anything else
yep.
you wanted to add to that?
Well, I'll just put in a little plug for my video as well. I got a video. It's called You Can't Ride Pretty, and it's a two-disc DVD set that I filmed at a live horse buying clinic that I did for the Wisconsin State Horse Council. And if you want a good place to start, in addition to the books, take that video out and watch it, and it'll give you a good idea to start. And I did it with live horse buyers that were looking for horses, and we turned them out in a pen full of horses and let them go pick one out, and then we just dissected what they got and what wasn't good and what was good. So it's a pretty good video, I think, and I think you'll get a lot out of it if somebody wants to watch it.
Yeah, I think that's interesting.
And I'll be down at the Midwest Horse Fair in April, and if anybody here in Wisconsin or the surrounding states wants to drop by and say hi, I'll have all the stuff there, and you can take a look at it, too.
Oh, well, will you stop back again and say hi to us here on the show? We'd love to have you back.
I sure will, anytime. Thanks for
all
having
right.
me.
All right, thank you, Smokey. We appreciate it. That's SmokeyBrannaman.com, and we'll put a link on our show notes and also on our Facebook page. Have a great day, Smokey, and heal that leg.
You too, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, bye. So that's Smokey Brannaman, and we appreciate him stopping by. I don't think we talked about anything we planned to talk about with him, but that's usually the way it goes with us. If you're concerned about how your horse is eating, if you're not quite sure whether you're feeding them the right stuff, if you just, you know, you're never quite sure if you're giving them too much supplement or not enough supplement or they're not getting the right vitamins, well, you can find out if you're doing it correctly by going to feedxl.com. It'll only take you a minute or two to stop by there, put some information in about your horse, put some information in about what you're feeding your horse, and you will get a report back that will show you whether you're feeding too much of something or too little of something else. And it's a very extensive report. It goes into all the different vitamins and things like that. And, you know, if you're feeding too much, this program could help you save money. It's at feedxl.com. Give it a try and, you know, get the peace of mind that you know that you're doing it correctly. Well, today's song is coming up here shortly. And then we're going to be talking about hooves, I guess. Today we're going to be talking about foot care, and I don't think they're talking about my feet. They're talking about your horse's feet with thehorse.com. And I think that Dr. Jones, I love Dr. Jones. She just explains things that even I, the horse husband, can understand it. And Dr. Jones and Christy will be back with us. But I wanted to dedicate today's song to Michelle and Rick in memory of Sprite. And I thought a perfect one for them would be The Language of Love.
The language of love is what I understand when you reach for me with a gentle hand. Actions speak louder, words aren't enough in the language of love. Not spoken with the tongue, it comes from the heart, it's heard by everyone. Crosses all borders around the world, the universal language of love. Every could understand. And then I saw you, and I reached out my hand. You didn't say a word, your eyes said enough, because you spoke the language of love.
And that is Marianne Kennedy, The Language of Love. And, of course, we dedicate that to Michelle and Rick in memory of Sprite, who lost her battle to colic yesterday. So our heart goes out to them. Sorry, you guys. Today's show is brought to you by Back on Track Products, backontrackproducts.com. I'm Jamie Jennings, along with Glenn the Geek. And I'm sorry, having Smokey Brenneman on was awesome. And, of course, his brother is Buck Brenneman. Okay, is that, do you get more cowboy name than Smokey and Buck? I mean, those two guys were born on the back of a horse being named Smokey and Buck. I
kind of want to know if Smokey is his real name. I wanted to ask him that, but I couldn't get up the guts to ask him, because you know what? He does Civil War reenactment. He carries guns. So I thought,
I can't
believe
we have this awesome horse trainer on, brother to Buck Brenneman, and you talk about military uniforms.
Isn't it interesting, though? We all have those little things that we're really interested in on the side, you know, that people
know,
do with their horses.
Cool.
That's one of the, you know, that's one of the comments we had on our Facebook page was, you know, they just love hearing about the different things people do with their horses. And there's all kinds of weird stuff out there that people do. And we're finding them all, boy, here on Horses in the Morning.
That's what we like to do, is we like to tell people all the cool stuff and different stuff that they can do with their horses. And like I was talking to somebody about it the other day. They were saying, what do you do? What's your show about? And I said, we kind of do it about everything. And the more random stuff you do with your horse, the better. Because we'd like to talk to you.
Yes.
I said, you know, basically, if you like to snow ski and you attach a rope to your horse and have somebody gallop through the snow while you ski behind it, we want to talk to you.
That's correct. That's what we were.
That was ski joring. We had them on. They compete.
You know, we had, I trying to get Jennifer to see if she can get a hold of him later today. I was reading through the news, and I noticed that in Texas, one of the largest Celtic festivals in the country is coming up this weekend. And I thought, you know, we like going to Celtic festivals because we just like the music and stuff. But then I noticed that they have a whole thing on Celtic, on the Celtic horses. And I was going, what the heck? What are they doing different with Celtic horses? So she's going to try and get them on, and they'll have this whole thing on horseshoeing and all that stuff. And I thought, you know, we got to find out what's different about Celtic horses. Do they ride and play, you know, the bagpipes, or do the horses play the bagpipes? I don't know. We're going to find out. So we're going to try and get them on the next day or two here to talk about their Horsey Celtic Festival.
Cool.
But you know what? Hey. Jennifer was doubting me. She said, when you were gone, I had another report from England about horses getting their manes whacked off in the middle of the night and people selling the horsehair. And she was all dowdy-pouty, saying, oh, I don't think this is happening. I think it's just, you know, I don't think it's real. Well, there was another article or another thing on the news at a TV station in San Antonio, Texas, that thieves are sneaking into stables and scalping horses. Now it's called scalping.
Oh,
I love how they've added that.
That's terrible.
No, they're not really scalping them, because that includes taking the skin off. But what they're doing is they're cutting off the horses and tails, or the tails and manes, so that they can resell it. Apparently, it goes up to $250 or $300 a pound. Which, how much frickin' hair do you need to make a pound? Is my question. And they're even saying that people will post it on Craigslist or eBay.
Hold on. Let me go to Craigslist and type in.
Because I've never seen an ad selling pounds of stolen horse hair. Do you think they put it stolen horse hair for sale? Do you think that's how they do it?
Okay. I got something that has horse hair. I just did a Craigslist search for sale, and I typed in horsehair, and here's what came up. You can be the owner of a Native American Indian bow and arrow and tomahawk set for $45. Indian bow, two arrows, hatchet, a rustic frontier appearance that makes great wall accents. It's adorned, get this, with feathers, horsehair, leather, and a beaver pelt. I'm pretty sure they stole that.
Do you think this
I'm
is the person
sure.
stealing it? We ought to find them.
I'm going to find them. They've got toys with horse hair on them. They must have stolen them. Oh, wait,
well,
another one.
Yeah.
Horse hair. Oh, wait. It's chaps that have already been used and they have may have horse hair on them.
Horse hair on them.
Sorry. Go ahead. So nothing here.
Well, they say they're actually using the horse hair to make bows of violins, which I don't know that I ever knew that, jewelry and extensions for show horses. So they're stealing the horse hair to put back on the horses. So, there we go.
My horse could use a bigger tail, actually. So maybe I should
there you go.
My neighbors.
Visit the neighbors. All right. Well, I think it's time for our next guest.
I think so, and we have them on the line, actually, too. We've got, you know, at this time every week we do a horse health report from the people at thehorse.com, and we talk to Christy and Dr. Jones. And, you know, last
there
week we talked about
again.
Colic. Oh, boy. Well, maybe not, because, you know, we're going to talk about the horse hoof today and basic hoof care. Oh, wait. I've looked down at the outline here, and we're going to talk about puncture wounds and abscesses. So you may want to leave one. Because I'm sorry, the juicier the abscess, the better.
There's nothing horse husbands hate worse than picking out a hoof and being the one to find the abscess. That just makes you want to quit right there. That's almost grounds for divorce, to be honest with you.
Oh, I think it's so satisfying. So, first of all, good morning. Good morning, Christy. Good morning, Dr. Jones.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, we're going to talk today about feet.
We are going to talk about feet. And right before we get started, I just wanted to make a comment about your horsehair search there on Craigslist.
Yeah.
At the stables where I grew up riding, we had a Shetland pony, and part of his enclosure was chain link fence. And he loved it because in the springtime, he would just scratch his whole side of his body up and down that chain link fence. He would just leave handfuls of his winter coat on the fence. And we actually had a lady who would come and pick up the hair and pull it off the fence and make sweaters out of it.
Oh, there you go.
Nice.
Well, at least she wasn't cutting it off the horse, which apparently is what's happening here.
She was only taking the discarded hair, so it was okay.
That's an allergy. That's an allergic reaction waiting to happen.
Well, it is entirely possible. I'm not sure how she screened her buyers, but... But on to the foot care stuff. We wanted to just talk about some basics of foot care. And one thing that we get asked about a good bit here at the horse, and Aaron probably gets a number of these questions as well, is what kind of angle should my horse's feet have? You know, what should be the right toe or heel angle, or how long should his foot really be? And Aaron, how do you usually answer those questions?
Well, it's different for each horse because of the way they're built. But the proper word is they should have a proper pastern hoof axis. So if you look at the fetlock, underneath the fetlock is the pastern area. You draw a line from there, and it should go straight down the front of the hoof wall if you're looking from the side of the horse's foot. If it goes to the coronary band and juts forward, that means it's broken back. If it goes to the coronary band and goes straight down, that means it's broken forward. So you want to have a nice straight line going from the fetlock joint across the top of the pastern bones to the coronary band and down the front of the hoof wall, and that's called the proper pastern hoof axis. It's pretty easy to eyeball from any horseman. It can do that from the side of a horse.
Right. And that brings me to a question I had for Glenn and Jamie along the lines of angles. What do you think, what would be your recommendation for the best thing you can do to kind of prepare for and stave off of problems? And Glenn, I'm sure you got a good one for this.
You're assuming that Glenn, like, thinks about hooves.
Yeah, I would say that probably, you know, I mean, you've got to have your farrier out every however often you need. Like here, we can get away with having the farrier about every 7 weeks because it's a drier climate and the hoof grows slower. But back in Atlanta, when it was a moist climate, my horse got done every 5 weeks. So I would say routine farrier care.
Very good. Glenn, what's your answer?
He's thinking really hard. I can see steam coming out of his ears right now.
Okay, we'll go with the routine barrier care.
Actually, okay, listen, Christy, he ran to the bathroom. I'm not going to lie.
Okay, fair enough.
Sorry about that.
Oh, hey, when nature calls, nature calls.
It does.
You know, when
He's
you
back.
Do a live show, you have to find time if they're under the bathroom. That's just the way it is.
Oh, we just love catching you out like that, Sean. Awesome.
Yeah, well, you did.
She's like, Glenn, what do you think? Silence.
Oops.
I think it was great.
Good answer. Good answer. Nice job.
Perfect. Well, routine farrier care is really important, and one of the things that we wanted to get into a little bit was actually a sort of a preventive tip as far as having your horse, having your veterinarian come out and do a lateral radiograph of your horse's feet while they're healthy instead of waiting until there's a problem. Erin, can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yes, it's becoming more and more common for horse owners to do what they say a baseline X-ray of the foot. And they do it from the side to get an idea of how that pasture and hoof axis is lying. And, you know, there are horses that are born with club feet. We've all heard that word. And their hoof tends to be a bit more upright and so does the bone inside. So sometimes this will help the farrier eyeball if they need to give the horse a bit more sole, if they need to cut down the heel, help enhance the heel growth, cut the toe off, things like that. And then the other view we like to do is from front to back of the hoof to see if there's a what we call medial to lateral balance of the hoof wall. And that helps the farrier out because that also balances the joint. And you'd be amazed that a lot of the horses that might look like they're balanced and you take the X-ray and you'll see their coffin joint is out of balance. And so it's going to cause some arthritis in that joint if the horse is used regularly, such as five-day-a-week training. So a side X-ray and a front X-ray, just for a baseline, is highly recommended, and more people are seeing the benefits of that and showing it to their farrier and getting a better job done on their horse's feet. And they don't have to do that every 6 months or every year. You do it once, and you may follow up a few years later. You could do it annually. It's certainly up to the vet, vet's recommendation and the farrier's recommendation.
So let me see if I'm getting this right, Christy.
Sure.
You take a baseline radiograph, one from the front, one from the side, because a horse that, let's say, the horse has a significant flare to the outside on his left front. So you're going to get rid of that flare. Flares are bad. But if you take that baseline radiograph, you might find that isn't really a flare. That's the hoof trying to match up with the column of the horse's leg. Am I getting that right?
Yes.
Cool.
And The balancing comes with working between the vet and the farrier.
They may add shoeing.
They may go barefoot. There's a lot of different things that can happen with this. So it's really a good idea to just get a straight baseline so you know where your horse's feet are. And you might do the baseline and say everything's perfect. And that's always the best result, as if
you
get perfect.
What we see on the outside, we assume the horse's bones are straight in there. We could be dead wrong. That's a really smart thing to do.
Yeah,
exactly.
We had one horse that was very lame on its right front for weeks and weeks, and we told him we needed to do these baseline X-rays with the farrier. So we met the farrier, he took the shoes off, we took these baseline X-rays, and the coffin joint was definitely tilted. And once we put shoes on that leveled out that coffin joint, I didn't even have to inject the coffin joint, the horse went sound.
Wow.
And I think it also comes in really handy if your horse has, should, God forbid, have any problems down the road. And it could be as simple as, you know, like what you're talking about, Erin, that things are just a little bit out of balance, or if things are kind of a progressive problem, like your horse's heels become more and more and more crushed. If you're taking these radiographs over a few years and you can see, boy, you know, we've obviously got something a little bit off with his hoof care because he's just gradually getting less and less and less heel, and no wonder he's sore. Or, you know, God forbid it's worse than that, and you end up with a laminitic horse, then you can see what was going on inside that horse's foot when it was healthy. You know, for example, one of the things, and I've covered a lot of laminitis conferences and whatnot, one thing that I keep hearing, and Erin, please feel free to weigh in here any place, is that if you don't really know what's going on inside that horse's foot when it's healthy, it's a little bit harder to interpret what changes might have happened because of this disease. You know, for example,
absolutely,
if you've got a horse with a more clubby or upright foot, often that, you know, one of the things that, a lot of people look for in a radiograph is whether the bone is rotated within the hoof, right? If you already have a hoof, a foot that's kind of upright, that's a little bit clubby, maybe you don't look at it and lay a club foot label on it, but if that bone often will appear to be a little bit rotated just because that tendon's a little bit tighter on that foot, and if you only look at the foot after, you know, after the horse has had a laminating episode, you say, oh, my God, he's rotated. He may not actually have been rotated due to laminitis. It may have been because he had that clubby foot.
Absolutely. That's very, very true, and that's a good point to be made about why these x-rays are very helpful.
And when horse shopping has been a very common theme throughout on Horses in the Morning, and I've had this personal experience where you look at a horse to purchase for yourself or somebody else, you take x-rays of the horse, it's like a six-year-old, and you see some changes in there. Unless there was a baseline before the horse, you know, 2-3 years ago, you don't know if that change in there has been exactly the same for the past 5 years and it's nothing to worry about, or if that change happened in the past 6 months and it's something you should worry about.
Absolutely.
That's just yet another tool for people down the line.
Just a way of knowing what's going on and just having more information to make decisions, really.
Okay, go ahead, guys.
All right.
We'll stop picking your brains. Go ahead.
No, please do. So Jamie mentioned routine farrier care as being one of the most important things you can do to stave off hoof problems, and that's really important. There's also, how do you find a good farrier to start with? And Erin, I think, has some suggestions for that.
Yes, help us.
I always say to go with recommendations. So you're going to go to a barn, boarding barn, and you'll ask a few people there who to use. You'll probably ask the barn owner, who do you use for a farrier? Well, great, that barn owner might have, you know, Mr. So-and-so or Miss So-and-so that they use to do their farrier work. I would also ask a couple other boarders, too, and make sure that the farrier is aware and familiar with the discipline you do. So if your horse is, let's say, a national show horse, rides Country English Pleasure, that's going to be a very different way to shoe that horse than it is going to be for a dressage horse. So it's very beneficial to use a farrier that knows your discipline and how you're going to ride this horse. If you're just pleasure riding and enjoying some occasional trail rides, majority of them can do it, but those that specialize in these performance horses may do, a bit more extravagant work in your mind on your horse than what you really, really need. So, again, just go ask your fellow trail riders, who do they use? Ask your fellow show people, who do they use? You don't necessarily have to go with who the barn person uses because they may not do the same discipline as you.
Yeah, I think that's important, too, is to kind of ask around, but also look at the other horse's feet, you know, and look and see how they're shod and how what you like. But that's the biggest question, I think, for horse owners is, you know, we know when they need to get their vaccines. We know when, you know, all these very basic horse care things, except for most horse owners have no idea what they want done to their horse's feet. So I would think, like, education on hoof care would be extremely important, but everybody has a different opinion, too, so you kind of need to go with what works for you. My horse has a very particular way of getting shod, and when I moved out here, nobody liked that. So I asked this one guy, I'm like, can you do this? And he goes, no, here's what I do. I'm not going to rock with that toe. I'm going to pull the shoe back, and I'm going to do this and this and this and this. I was like, okay, next. I was like, why can't you?
Yeah.
You don't change.
You're an educated horse owner that knows over the years what has worked for your horse. And it's very important to be there at the farrier appointment, if you can be, to ask the questions and watch how the process is being done and see the difference from, you know, the day before to the day after the job. The other comment I want to throw in here with being there when your farrier's there is that sometimes farriers will quick horses. And it's not necessarily a bad thing that they did that. It happens. We're all human. They may see your horse for the very first time and quick them the first 2 times they do it because they don't know how short back they can come with the toe. And quicking them, I mean, is they get a little bit close to the sensitive lamina and the horse goes lame. And your horse shouldn't be lame for weeks and weeks and weeks after the farrier's there. They might be lame for a couple days, but by God, tell the farrier because they leave.
Yeah.
They don't know what's going on with your horse. So don't say that that's a bad farrier because they quicked your horse. They don't have any idea that they quicked your horse unless you tell them.
Yeah, Absolutely. So I think that talking to your vet and talking to your farrier and trying to marry the two is a good idea. I think it's a difficult one because I know a lot of farriers don't want to work with vets and vice versa, but I think that that's changing, and I think that you can attempt to get your vet and your farrier on the same page and educate yourself on what is going to best help your horse.
Absolutely. I agree with that because it a lot of the meetings that we're going to, it's a very, very common theme these days is getting vets and farriers to work together. They had a whole day on this at the AAP convention late last year. But I want to come
back
to this.
Which was attended by vets and farriers.
Yes.
Yay.
So it's being attended by both, and they're seeing how we can marry this relationship and make it work for the horse.
Absolutely. And I want to come back just for a second to being there when your farrier's there. I think there are a lot of benefits to that. And one is that you can ask questions of your farrier, ask why he's doing something. Once you pick this guy out or girl, that you can ask questions, why are you doing this? What are we going for? Just so you can educate yourself on your horse, not just from books or magazines or websites, which are awesome, especially ours. But there's a lot you can learn just from your own horse. It's just much more specific, and you also may learn some things. For example, if you're not usually there when your horse's feet are getting worked on, you can learn a little bit more about your horse's behavior, and there may be something there that you can do to help. For example, the farrier is not a miracle worker, and you know as the old saying goes, you don't always do a great job when you're just nailing whatever flies past your face. So. You know, if your horse isn't standing well for the farrier, that can really contribute to how good of a job your farrier can do. And if you're there to see this, then it's something that you can work on in between visits so that your horse is a better customer for that farrier and can get a better job done on his feet as well.
It can also affect the price of the shoeing.
Or whether
right.
or not they
and
ever
it,
come
it
back.
Also brings to the point that when do you start with foot care? You start 4 weeks after they're born. You start the first day that they're born picking their feet up so they know what you're doing. 4 weeks after they're born, have your farrier look at the horse's feet and see, where do we go from here? Oh, you can wait another 4 weeks. Oh, you can. Every time your farrier's out to do your horse, have them look at the babies, have them pick up the babies, maybe rasp once or twice across the baby's bottom of the feet so they know what they're doing. So it's not a frightening experience for these horses.
Now, guys, we're going to have to wrap up in a couple minutes here. So, you know, maybe we could make this part one and next week do part two, because I think looking at the outline of what you guys are going to talk about, I think common foot problems is something that we probably should spend a lot of time on. But we only have a couple minutes. But I wanted to just point out one of the things that you talked about, the puncture wounds with the nail in the hoof. How many times do you see horses that get the hoof steps on a nail, and what is the first thing you should do about that, Dr. Jones?
Run.
Don't
you,
take
if you're
the nail
a horse
out.
Husband, you run. Hide in the house until your wife gets home. That's what you do.
He's running
my
out, so he doesn't have to hear us talk about it.
Yeah, my comment is don't take the nail out. Now, I know that sounds really terrible and really difficult, especially if you're out on 5 acres.
Not for me.
Lots. And you go out there and the horse is in the middle of the pasture with a nail in its foot and you're thinking, I got to get to the barn. How do I get it to the barn? Don't move it. It's an emergency call. Have the veterinarian come out, see where the nail is. If they can take an x-ray, depends on the electricity and everything. If they can take an x-ray, that's the most important thing. They want to know where does that nail go. There are so many important structures in the hoof capsule underneath the hoof wall that we need to know where did it go into. Did it go into a joint? Did it go into a bursa? Did it go into the tendon sheath? Did it go through a few ligaments or tendons that are vital or important? Is it up against the bone? All these things can require surgical intervention. And if you pull it out, the horse is going to feel good right away, I'll tell you that. And you'll be able to walk to the barn maybe with a little short stride. But after a couple days of it festering, especially if it's against a bone, you're going to have a bigger problem in about 3 days or 2 days after that problem, after that nail was pulled out. And we veterinarians will have no idea where it went or the path because that closes over really fast once you pull the nail out. Everything collapses around it. So it's hard to find the path after the nail's out. So don't move the horse. If you see a horse that won't move, the first thing I tell people is look at the bottom of the foot, see if there is a nail in there. And if there is no nail, then of course try to get the horse moved to a safe spot. But my other comment on top of that before we completely wrap up is pick your horse's feet every day. I know that sounds like a real pain. You're going to feed them. You're going to throw feed. You got to run to work. Throw feed, run to work. Try to pick their feet every day. If you can't do every day, do every other day. Get aware of what's at the bottom of their foot, especially if they don't have shoes on. You want to see if there's bruising going on, rocks being caught up in the foci, softness to their feet. You can stop problems before they get worse.
Absolutely. Well, I think we're going to have to revisit this topic for sure, if not next week, very soon, because I think, you know, we can always take a lot of questions about basic foot care and taking care of your horse's hoof, because as we all know, no hoof, no horse. So thank you, Christy. Thank you so much, Dr. Jones, for being on the show today. And we will talk to you guys again next week. Have a great week.
Thanks so much. You too.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Man, we always learn so much. It's so educational on Wednesday around 10, because they cover everything. And Glenn, we didn't even get to the abscess part, so you should be able to have
lunch. I was very happy about that, actually.
Did I tell you about the abscess that came out of my horse's hoof the other day and the pus shot 6 feet across the stall, like exploded?
Oh, no, we're gonna,
awesome.
We're gonna go on now. And I have a story here that I didn't share with you earlier because there's so much wrong with this story. Do I have time for a story?
Oh.
Yes, I think I do. Okay. So I'm going to read part of this because you can't make this stuff up. Two of America's favorite young female singers have just bought one of America's favorite male singers a very special birthday gift. Selena Gomez and Demi Lovato went on eBay and purchased a Shetland pony to give their fellow singer and cherished friend, Justin Bieber, for his 17th birthday on Tuesday, March 1st. Gomez and Lovato had heard that Bieber recently spent a couple of days down in Texas at Robert Pattinson's ranch and that he had a great time. At first, Gomez and Lovato were going to buy Justin a Harley-Davidson motorcycle, but then they heard from Kim Kardashian that he already had one. So the singing duo decided that they would get him his very own horse, a big quarter horse. But after speaking, after speaking over the phone with noted horse expert Chauncey Braiding Iron Chilworthy, owner of the Braiding Iron Horses to Go stable in Amarillo, Texas, they changed their mind. Chilworthy informed the two young ladies that for someone of Justin's height and weight, it would be much better to get him started off in what is referred to as a starter horse, such as a Shetland pony, which is much smaller than your average horse, like a quarter horse, a thoroughbred, a Clydesdale, or a plow horse. Mr. Chilworthy, who owns a 13,000-acre horse ranch in Texas Panhandle, expressed that it's been his experience that by putting a young man who is short and on a short and smaller horse rather than putting up on a large horse, the possibilities of him getting bucked off and injured are reduced by 70 to 80%. Selena and Demi readily agreed. They thanked Mr. Chilworthy for his expert advice and went on eBay and purchased a Shetland pony for Justin's 17th birthday.
Wait a second.
There you go.
First of all, I want you to look at this story, and I want you to tell me exactly where this story came from, because if it is from theonion.com, you have been bad, my friend.
No, it was out of an L.A. paper, actually.
You have got to be kidding me.
No, I'm
that
not kidding.
That is the most ridiculous. I didn't think eBay sold ponies and horses and stuff.
Okay, and you know, the one thing I didn't do to see if I was being punked here is to look up Mr. Chilworthy's stable. By the way, that's just too good to be true. Oh, wait a minute.
It can't be real. There's no way. That is just the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And then
okay, it might be a spoof.
Really? What makes you think that?
It could be a spoof, but it got me for a while. I just loved the story. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah,
it might be a spoof. I may have been spoofed. Not only did I go to the bathroom when I'm being asked questions today, I may have been spoofed by this story.
Yes, considering that buying Justin Bieber a Shetland pony, come on, it's ridiculous. Off eBay.
It's kind of funny, though, because I just kind of would see him riding a little Shetland pony.
Well, you know, what I thought of was, you know how that whole theory that people look like their pets or their horses?
Yes.
Bieber?
Yes.
Shetland?
Well, that's true. It's kind of true, actually. There was a real story, though, that was kind of incredible, and it could have been tragic, but ended up being okay. Did you read about Paul Tapner, the inventor in England, about the accident?
Oh, it's a phenomenal story. And do you want to tell it or you want me to?
You tell it. You tell it.
Oh, this Paul Tapner, who is an advanced four-star inventor who, he was in the World Equestrian Games.
Well, he won badminton last year, yeah.
Yeah, and he won badminton. Three of his horses had a lucky escape win, and they call horse vans over there lorries. Collided, a big truck hit his horse van yesterday. They had broken down, and they were parked on the side of the road. And while they were going to get help, they had turned around and were going to the next exit. Somebody had picked them up. They saw this big monster truck hit their horse van to the point where I want to say this is the quote from a witness in the accident. The horse on the rear got thrown out, spun a circle in midair, and landed splat on the road, then got up and trotted towards the oncoming traffic. This is on the side of a freeway, and apparently it looked like there was a lot of blood. These were all young thoroughbreds, 4 and 5 years old. They're all okay.
That's
crazy?
That's just amazing. And there's a picture of the van. It's smashed. I mean,
it's completely smashed. We have got to post that picture on Facebook, because the fact that these three horses are okay, the impact of the crash ripped the horse box open and threw the horses out onto the road, and they're fine. I mean, they have some scratches and bumps and bruises and everything, but they're not dead.
And, you know, this must have been horrible for Paul, because he wasn't driving that particular truck. His groom was. And by the way, they call him Head Girl. And we couldn't get away with that in the United States. but his groom was driving the truck, had pulled over because it broke down. Paul was coming up and was about 100 meters away when he saw this happen. He was in a truck further back when he saw this all happen. Can you imagine seeing this happen, you know, in front of you? Wow.
No. It's just horrible. I mean, you hear stories like this where a couple is parked on the side of the road and they have a flat tire and somebody hits them, just stuff like that. But to have somebody hit an entire horse van, the horses fly out of the road and onto the pavement, and everybody survives. That guy, I'm putting my money on him for Rolex this year. That guy's got some good karma. Paul Tapner, I'm picking you.
Well, we're glad everybody's okay in that. So we have a bunch more stories here that we're not going to have time to get to that we'll do tomorrow. But there was a whole bunch more that we really wanted to talk about. But we had such fun. We want to thank our guest, Smokey Brannaman, for joining us today. And I noticed that thank you to Barbara, who on our Facebook page already went on and bought Smokey's book and downloaded it to her Kindle. Her Kindle. Barbara, you're also one that spends more than $600 a year on your electronics. So thank you, Barbara, for doing that, and we appreciate Smokey stopping by. And, of course, the horse, as always. That was a very interesting conversation about the hoof, and you're right. I think we should revisit that again, and I'll be absent that day. And you guys can talk all about abscesses and blood and gore and goop.
And you're not allowed to go to the bathroom, because apparently she's going to try to talk to you right a second you get up and go to the restroom.
Talk to me during these segments. You'll be fine. I'll run to the bathroom. And then I get back and I hear you guys laughing about me going to the bathroom.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Well, she just kept asking, Glenn, what do you think? And then Jen would talk, and then, let's get back to Glenn. What do you think, Glenn? And I kept waiting. First, come back. What's taking you so long? Finally, I was like, he's in the bathroom. It's sorry, he's not here.
Well, thanks for throwing me into the bus there, Jamie. I know I can count on
it. I had to. It was necessary. Be sure to listen to all the shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. You can follow us on Facebook. Just search for Horses in the Morning, and we're on Twitter at Horse Radio.
And you can, of course, listen to all of our recorded shows either on our website or on our affiliate websites or on iTunes. More and more people are listening to the recorded shows on iTunes now, and we certainly appreciate that. Don't forget that you can also listen live on your phone at horsesinthemorning.mobi on your browser, and you can listen live on your iPhone or your Droid. We'd love to have you join us every day live as well. And we'll be back again tomorrow morning with a couple of more great guests. Say goodbye, Jamie.
Goodbye, everybody.